Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
And how we doing on this Tuesday morning, 4:05? As we got you here on The Fan, McMonagle with you for another hour. As we got you to the warm-up show at 5-888-808-1019. And we started this Tuesday morning with what we will see Tuesday night. Game 5 of the first round of the NBA playoffs, Madison Square Garden. The New York Knicks coming off the controversial end, which shouldn't have been all that controversial. End of game 4 with a 3-1 lead. And to me, we talked about it earlier, tonight is a very big game for the New York Knicks. Listen, they have a 3-1 lead, right? It's a commanding lead. They've proven they can win in Detroit. Great. This is the kind of game that will tell me a lot about this team. You good teams end these series. If they allow the Pistons to come into this building, who, in my opinion, outplayed the Knicks pretty much every minute. There's the 5 minute span of the 21-0 run at the end of game one is about the only time the Knicks had the upper hand in the entire two games they played at Madison Square Garden. If they allow this Pistons team, who you know is going to be coming out with their hair on fire to start this game, that's what they've done this entire series. They have played a physical, hard-fought, and I know everybody, sidetrack here for a second, I know everybody's going to say, oh, well, it's going to be a completely different world against the Boston Celtics. It's another level. Why would you even talk about this series as if it matters to the... I'm telling you, I'm not saying this Pistons team is anywhere near as good or talented as the Celtics, nor am I saying this series is going to have the same feel or... the Knicks are going to be in the same position they've been in this series? Clearly not. But I do think this Pistons team has been far better than I even expected and has played a tougher brand of basketball than I expected, even though they were talking up how physical they were going to play. And maybe it's because the refs have kind of allowed it. It's just become this very physical, hard fought. Every game comes down to the end. The Pistons keep on coming back. They've shot the three well at times. They've done a lot of good things in this series. And I think it's been a good test. And I feel better about the Knicks having made it through these four games. And if they can finish off this game tonight and don't allow the Pistons to come in, a desperate team, into your building and take 2 of 3 of the first 3 games played here in this series to send it back to Detroit, like, that would be disheartening for me. And especially we talk about, you know, the minutes and, you know, Brunson's ankle and everything. Let's end this now and get ready for that Boston series that we've all been waiting for all year. The series that they went out and traded Mikal Bridges for, or, you know, traded to get Mikal Bridges for, or acquired Karl-Anthony Towns for. It's all been building up to get to this point. And if they allow the moment to be bigger for the Pistons, if they allow this game to mean more to Detroit, and they have to play a sixth game back in Detroit, and let's be honest, they're a foul call that happens 100 times out of 100 in regular games away from having 3 foul shots determine the fate of that game in game 4. Like, every one of these games have been so close. I am not messing around. This is a big game for the Knicks, and we need to say the same stuff that has continued and that they saw change from game 2 to games 3 and 4 have to continue. Karl-Anthony Towns, who is breaking that moniker of being soft and invisible in these big games needs to continue that trend. They need to get offense from OG. They need to get offense from Mikal Bridges at times. Brunson, I feel pretty confident Brunson's going to continue to be the best closer in the game. But they need to do all of the things that we saw them do over the last two games in Detroit. And this is pretty much, to me, it'll make me feel better about the next series. And it just tells me a lot about who this team is. Good teams close out these series when they can. The fourth win is always the hardest to get. Do it tonight. Save your legs, get ready for this Celtics series, as well as prove to me you're the type of team that doesn't mess around and put your foot on people's throat when you have the opportunity. This is a big game tonight, Madison Square Garden, and I'm looking for more of the same, and I'm looking for Karl Anthony Towns to have a big MSG moment, a big game, a big fourth quarter, because that's what we've seen from him. We've seen really incredible shot-making, difficult shot-making, defense, rebounding. We've kind of seen it all, and I'm really looking forward to this game tonight and putting this series behind them. And I'll tell you the truth, like honestly, we saw the way the other series is going with Milwaukee, and they're dealing with obviously Dame's injury and everything. This was the tougher series. This is the series, and I know people are going to poo-poo it. It's the Pistons. When we talked about the Pistons to start this series and how if it was even close, it would be a problem with the Knicks, that's how I felt of it. Like, it would be a problem with the Knicks. And while they didn't play great in the first two games and they've had their issues in this series, no doubt, I think the Pistons have done more to put themselves in a position to win this game than just the Knicks and their cohesion and their toughness, because I think they've been right there with this Pistons team as far as being tough. Like, they haven't backed away an inch. And tonight's a big tell. Like, you do not want to prolong this series. You do not want to go back to Detroit and set up a possible Game 7. And listen, anything can happen in these games. We've seen Brunson have to leave games with this ankle injury at any moment. Like, you get into a Game 7 and Brunson needs to do the same thing he did in Game 4. Like, if he's gone for 12 minutes of play, if he's gone for a quarter, if he's gone for 10 minutes of play, good luck. Like, anything can happen. I do not want to mess around. This is an important game to put the Pistons behind them and have ample time to get ready for the Boston Celtics. 888-808-1019. We also talked Giants draft a little bit, Shedeur Sanders, and a little bit of baseball with the Mets pouring it on for the final game in Washington to salvage that split against the Nationals. The offensive outpour, and especially from the 9 RBIs from Nimmo, and hopefully he's turning it around. But again, for me, until things change, every single Met game, I am going to talk about the starting rotation. Because, yeah, I know they scored 19 runs, and it didn't matter how well Griffin Canning pitched. But again, I mean, Griffin Canning has a sub-3 ERA. This is one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball last year. If Griffin Canning was any worse, he wouldn't have been starting. That's how bad he was. And he comes here and he's getting out of every jam. The rotation's the best in baseball. They have the best ERA in baseball. And right now they're going to be tested more than they've been to start the year because the bullpen is down. You got Minter on the IL, Buteau not pitching all that well, and Diaz unavailable at different times. So this rotation is going to have to be leaned on even more than it's been, at least for innings, over the next few weeks. So the Mets continue to play good baseball. They welcome in the Diamondbacks tonight. And the Yankees drop game one of the first three-game set against Baltimore in a frustrating loss. Warren made one really terrible pitch and gave up a three-run home run. The Yankees battled a little bit. But ultimately, this lineup has some flaws right now, and I think it's time to move some guys down. I just talked about Bellinger and Jazz and the way they're swinging through fastballs and moving them down a little bit. And then we actually saw Devin Williams as well in this game. And look, they said something on the broadcast that I don't agree with, and I talked about this yesterday. The thing with Devin Williams, and I applaud the Yankees for putting Devin Williams in the position they did yesterday. And I actually think Aaron Boone has been very good at this. Maybe slow moving for many Yankee fans, didn't like it, should have been done earlier. I don't think you could have done it any earlier. I thought the other night when he blew that game against Toronto, I wasn't going to do it before then. I saw terrible body language. They had to do it then, but I don't know how much earlier. But Clay Holmes, certainly last year, with all the blown saves, everybody wanted him out of the closer role earlier than they did. But you have to give it to Boone and the Yankees on how they handle the situation after. Because many people, many of you Yankee fans who wanted Clay Holmes, who's now the, you know, unbelievable starting pitcher for the Mets lab, but many of you who wanted him out of the closer role wanted him shot to the moon. Wanted no part of him, never see him again, no big spots. I don't even want him on the postseason roster. They want you, Yankee fans wanted them to forget about Clay Holmes. And instead, the Yankees continued to put him in pressure situations, maybe obviously not closer situations, but pressure situations, not just blowouts and, you know, meaningless innings, like impactful innings where the game is still in balance, and they used him, and he still struggled even at points at doing that, but they kept throwing him out there and working at him to the point where he gave them 9 consecutive scoreless innings in the postseason and was arguably into the World Series the best, him along with Weaver, the best and most important, getting some of the biggest outs of the entire American League playoffs. And right now, to go right back to Williams in a spot in the 8th inning, only down a run. They're warming him up when they're down 3, but they score another 2 to make it a 1-run game. And they still bring him out there in the 8th against a divisional opponent where they just rallied, scored runs, made it a 1-run game. And that's still a pressure situation. And Devin Williams comes through, has a 1-2-3 inning, probably threw the ball as well. Got a swing and a miss on a changeup, which I feel like we haven't seen. But I think you can't just throw him out there in slop time. You got to give him some sort of pressure situation. And I thought, and I'm sure the Yankees will do a good job of it, and they did a good job of it with Clay Holmes, and they did a good job of it yesterday. But the one thing I heard on the broadcast that I don't agree with is they said that the Yankees fully expect Devin Williams to be the closer again. I don't think that's how they should view it. Devin Williams should obviously needs to start pitching better, no doubt. And I expect him to. But when you make the transition to Weaver, who was your closer at the end of last year, who was your closer in the World Series, and who's yet to give up a run, I'm sorry, as much as I respect Devin Williams, and I'll tell you he's been terrific, and that like the start of the year, people wanted Weaver to be the closer. And I'm like, no, Devin Williams has earned being the closer. You know, Weaver was a starting pitcher 2 years ago who was terrible. Like, Weaver's just transitioning into the bullpen. Devin Williams has been a closer for 2.5 years, as good as anyone in the game, and has been a great reliever, period, for 4 straight years. Like, he is a top reliever in the sport. When he gets traded to the Yankees, he deserves to be the closer. But now that he's faltered, and you've gone back to a guy who's yet to give up a run and was closing games for you in the World Series, to me, and you're only on a 1-year contract with Devin Williams, Weaver's the closer. And unless Weaver falters, unless there's an issue with Weaver where he's not pitching well, Devin Williams getting on track and Devin Williams becoming Devin Williams again is great, and it's obviously needed for this team. But I'm not taking it away from Weaver unless he shows me he can't be the closer. I'll have Devin Williams. That's fine with me. I mean, we'll see and how the Yankees want to handle it. But the broadcast yesterday made it seem like once Devin Williams is back to being himself, which, again, I fully expect to happen, once that happens, they're going to put him right back in the closer role. And I don't think I would do that to Weaver. I understood at the beginning of the year, he's got a track record. Weaver's only been a reliever for a little bit, as great as he was last year. I thought the trade was excellent for Devin Williams, and I would have slotted him right into the closer, and my hope was that I would never have to even think about taking him out of the closer's role. But now that I have, and Weaver still hasn't given up a damn run, and this team last year turned into something different in that bullpen once Weaver became the closer, now that I'm back in that situation, I'm not changing it. Devin Williams can be my 8th inning guy, and I'm fine with that. He's not going to be, I mean, he's going to want closer money, and even if he pitches great with his track record, he'll probably get closer money again. But I really think Weaver should just be the closer now. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Morning, C-Mac.
Good morning, buddy.
I happen to agree with you because Weaver hasn't given up a run yet, so why are they going to... But what they did last night was very good because they gave a chance to go out there and find himself.
Well, I can tell you, if he gave up runs in that situation, the fans would have been livid. Yankee fans would have been. I would have been taking calls all night long on how he gave up. If he gave up two runs in that spot and turned a one-run deficit into a three-run deficit, Yankee fans would have been furious.
Yeah, and me included. But he did pitch very well. He got out of it, and they just had a bad loss, right? Will Warren makes one mistake, and that's the end of the game.
Yeah, and Yarbrough came in and did was really good. That was the best performance of Yarbrough's tenure with the Yankees.
Over tenure here, last night. But getting to the Knicks, like you said, they have to close it out today. They can't go to a game six or a game seven because then you're gonna if you go seven and then you have to play Boston. What are the chances then?
The chances
are slim and none.
Yeah, no,
they
I
have
agree.
To get.
Go ahead, Stu.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, man.
Yeah, but if they go to a Game 7, what are the chances of them even getting near the Celtics? The Celtics are going to be waiting for them?
Yeah.
But you know what surprised me? Golden State being ahead of Houston 3-1.
Thank you for the call. And that honestly doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, the pedigree of the Golden State Warriors, along with playoff Jimmy Butler, who took over in the fourth quarter last night, and after having a miserable first half and getting into it with the Rockets. And then, you know, listen, this is what Golden State does. They get the stop at the end of the game. Whatever you want to say about Draymond Green, and there's plenty to say, he's an excellent defensive player, and he made a big-time stop. Butler gets the rebound. And I'm not surprised. As good as Houston's been this year as the two seed, I don't know if I would have necessarily expected it, but surprised. I'm not surprised the Golden State Warriors are winning playoff series. I'm not. We've seen it too much. But I do want to thank you for agreeing with me at the start of the call, Stuart. You very rarely do that, so I appreciate it. Devin, I think Weaver's been so good that I just, once I make this move, now I'm sticking with it until I have to make it again. Mitchell in Fort Lee. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, Big Mac. How you doing, Big Mac? Good morning. How's everything? I'm doing pretty good. Just came back from JFK, so it was nice, easy ride. Head back, get home for a few hours and go back to work. But, you know, talking about the Yankees, I agree 100% with you. It's time to change the batting order. And I have to tell you, and I know that I've always said, LeMahieu, but you know what? He's doing pretty well down in the minors. Let's bring him up.
Yeah.
Put him at third base. Maybe we can lead him off there and it'll give a little more, it'll change the whole batting order.
Yeah, I've been waiting to say this. I didn't want to say it yet because it's only been a couple games, and plus I think they're going to give him an extended run. I think he's got until May 22nd before they have to make a decision when his rehab assignment ends. It's like the end of May. I have to admit, I can't believe I'm going to say that I'm excited about DJ LeMahieu, and I'll tell you why. It's not just that he's got, you know, he's hitting 600 in his first 10 at bats. Like that, it's not even that. I've watched the highlights. I think it was his second at bat. He hit a ball 420 feet to dead center field. And I know it's minor leagues. I don't even care. If I saw it in batting practice, I would be surprised. You could knock me over with a feather if I saw DJ LeMahieu last year hit a ball 420 feet in batting practice. Like he hasn't impacted the baseball that way in a long time. So. And then he hit another double down the line that pretty much hit the wall. In the at-bats I've seen, in the highlights I've seen, he's driving the baseball. If he was 6-for-10 with a couple of bloops and an infield single, I wouldn't feel this way. And again, it's 10 at-bats. That's why I want to see more, and I haven't said it. You brought it up. But I fully, in my head, have been manifesting the I'm actually excited about DJ LeMahieu segment that I'm planning on eventually having. But, like, yeah. And thank you for the call, Mitch. I appreciate it, man. And plus, Cabrera has been bad defensively. He's got 4 throwing errors already this year. How is Nolan Arenado doing, by the way? Has anybody checked up on Nolan Arenado? Hitting walk-off home runs? The guy should be a Yankee. I've been Nolan Arenado should be a freaking Yankee. He's having a bounce back year. Him and Goldschmidt at the corners would be a nice little touch. They'd be having so much fun right now. We'd be better off. We'd have another right-handed bat yelling about. Now, what's the talk? I was watching some baseball show, and what are they talking about? Now, you know, St. Louis is doing a little bit better than they thought. Maybe, you know, they might keep him or wait till the deadline. Yeah, if they had an opportunity where nobody else wanted him, and it was just money, and now that he's off to a good start, they're going to wait to the deadline, and who knows how many teams are going to want a right-handed third baseman who's having a good year in the pedigree of Nolan Arenado. It should have been done to start the year. So dumb.
Did you see he has more walks, almost as twice as many walks and strikeouts?
Yeah. No, Nolan, he's off to a great start this year. I watched Verducci on the first week of the season talk about how he's hitting fastballs he hasn't hit in 2 years. He had a 98-mile-an-hour fastball up and in for a home run in like the third game of the year, and they did like some you know nonsense that we don't really care about, all the metrics, whatever, and he hadn't hit a fastball like that in 2 years. He hadn't had exit velo on a fastball with that velocity up in the zone in 2 years. Man, that's going to annoy me. If he has a really good season and then gets traded to the friggin', you know, who knows? Probably the Los Angeles Dodgers, because Muncy's having a town. Dodgers.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Long sets up high, stares at Lindor, the payoff pitch. Bientos hits it high in the air to left field. It's got legs. It's deep. It's back near the wall. It is gone! Mark Bientos has added yet another chapter to what is becoming a ridiculous postseason for the New York Mets. He's tied the game.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 431, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. So I talked about it a little bit yesterday. I was sitting at the, I was just about to sit down to the dinner table with the kids, and I got a text message from Gio. And it was, Gio sent me a picture of him and some guy. They're taking a picture at the Portly Villager, which is the bar that Gio always talks about. It's the one right around his house, and he did a charity event for Boomer's charity there. And he just sent me the picture, no caption, no nothing, and I didn't recognize the gentleman in the picture with Gio, and I assumed that it was one of the cornhole players who dominated me and relieved me of a couple of 20s as we were, you know, got embarrassed playing cornhole. But no, lo and behold, it was the great Brett in Long Island who made it down to the charity event and looked like a really fun, affable guy who was enjoying himself and probably had a great time at the bar, and just a completely different character than the one who calls me every morning looking for fights. But maybe we could, you know, maybe we could settle things. You look like a guy, Brett, who, you know, you look like someone we could have a drink at a bar and have a good afternoon with. So maybe we could bury the hatchet. What do you think, Brett? No? Yes. No, you're going to come right in.
Chris,
just the way you said it.
I have to say, my buddy was there with me, Billy. He bought Boomer's Stein helmet. And I got to say,
oh, very nice.
You know, I feel sorry for Gio. You know, it was the first time I ever saw him. You know, he looks like this tired, overworked, bags under your eyes, screaming for a vacation like dad who's trying to, like, please everybody. So I felt terrible, man. Give that guy a break. And Boomer, how about showing up to your own fundraiser? You know, we thought we'd get a picture with you or something. Wow, Boomer. And, you know.
Well, you got the helmet.
Chris, you got the helmet. That was good. Got a deal on the helmet. No picture with Boomer, though. That's all right. And Chris, man, and Knicks, I'm glad I didn't, you know, listen to your take after game two when you're yelling at me that it's Thibodeau's fault how he played and he didn't shoot the ball. I know. And now he's Patrick Ewing. So, boy, do you look silly with that? And you look silly with the Sanders take. Two silly things, man. You got to do better, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we can get a drink and we can play cornhole.
Forget it. Forget everything I just said.
Man.
Forget everything
I just said.
How do
I look
bad?
I said,
how did I look bad? How do I look? You're amazing. Thank you for the call, Brett. I tried to open it up to having a nice, friendly talk. And he immediately comes out, calls, you know, I mean, what is it? What happens when you dial the phone, man? Because I heard it was a great time at the bar, but you dial the phone and you're like, telephone tough guy from Lethal Weapon and Joe Pesci. Yeah, telephone tough guy. That's right. You come on, you talk about how Gio looks old and tired. Where the hell was Boomer? And Chris, you look silly. How do I look silly? I called for Karl-Anthony Towns. Yeah, I called for Karl-Anthony Towns to be more involved in the offense, and that's what happened. I don't look silly. I said the coach has to make sure it happens, and I think the coach made sure it happened. So I gave and then I came on the game after and gave the coach credit for making sure that Karl-Anthony Towns, you could see the style of play in the fourth quarter changed from game two to games three and four. How do I look silly? I said Karl-Anthony Towns needs to be more involved, and he got more involved. Where's the silliness? And the Shedeur Sanders thing, nobody expected him to be the fit. If I look silly, so does Mel Kiper and every other evaluator of the quarterback position who figured this guy was a top first-round pick. His over-under was the 21st pick. He got picked, what, 144? I really don't feel like I look all that silly that I thought Shedeur Sanders would go higher in the draft. And yeah, listen, I wasn't there for all the meetings and everything else that's led to this precipitous drop from the first round all the way down to the fifth. But as far as talent and what I would have been happier and I'd probably be even more excited today if they jumped up and took Shedeur Sanders instead of Jackson Dart. I got to be totally honest with you. Talent-wise, quarterback-wise, I'm no quarterback guru, and I'll take Brian Daboll's word for it. That's all that matters. But today, sitting here just for me, I would have been more excited if they ended up taking Shedeur Sanders in the first round. I thought he was the better quarterback. I thought he was the better college quarterback. We will see what happens, and clearly it wasn't just about talent with Shedeur. And all the stories came out, and obviously Brian Daboll and him had some sort of interaction that did not go well during the combine meeting or whatever meeting that they had that did not go well. So clearly the Giants, or at least Brian Daboll specifically, was off of him along with every other team in the league. And we went over this yesterday and all the different reasons why he fell and what he did to himself with the way he handled things and the impact his father had on it. And then really it just became a matter of value and what's worthy of the quarterback position once Shedeur hit a certain level. Like Shedeur as the starter of your team, if you think he's that good, kind of makes sense. Even if you are willing to take on his attitude, like it still makes sense. But then once he gets past the second round and you're in the third round, then it's like, well, now I'm not investing in him to be my starter or to be the future. And he's probably not going to be thrilled with that. And so for a backup or, you know, a shot in the dark type quarterback pick, is it worth taking the headache that is Shedeur and Deion? So like then it became like its own thing where it almost didn't make any sense in the third and fourth round. And then the value got too high in the fifth. It was almost like the value would have been there in the first and second, but he created an issue by the way he handled meetings, his attitude, his entitlement, and everything else that came along with how he behaved after the college football season ended to the day of the draft. Everything with his father, all the comments about picking where they want to go. I know it was months and months ago, but he did say it. He tried to backtrack it over the last few weeks and months, but he did say it. You know, the idea that he wants to coach his son in the NFL one day, which is what he said, like all that stuff, as well as how Shedeur handled it, as well as his ability. But he was talent-wise worthy of a first or second round pick, didn't get there because of all the stuff circulating it, the circus surrounding him. And then once you get into third and fourth, it almost like it doesn't make sense anymore because to take him there. I'm not really investing in him to be my guy. There's no promise of being the future. There's no real ideal, especially for teams that either have already drafted a quarterback or teams that don't need a quarterback necessarily. So like the third and fourth, it almost doesn't make sense anymore. And then the fifth, finally, the value was too great for the talent that eventually got picked by the Browns. So it was a very weird, and I, you know, everyone has their own reasoning for it. We went over all this yesterday, but I don't feel foolish at all thinking I thought Shedeur Sanders, I mean, Evan Roberts was saying up until the day of the draft that he expected the Giants to draft him third. A lot of people did. I don't feel foolish. Dennis in Bayonne. What's up, Dennis?
What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy?
I was wondering, what's your take on why didn't the Rams pick up Shedeur? He could have sat behind Stafford for 2 years. If the value wasn't that high, they could have got him in the later rounds like they did, and he could have learned from Matthew Stafford. The game is pretty much similar. He can't really run. McVay could have did wonders with that kid. He's accurate. Yeah.
I don't disagree with McVay could impact Shedeur Sanders in a positive way. That's certainly true. But again, that falls in the lines of, like, is Shedeur worth, is the issue of Shedeur and Deion sitting behind an aging quarterback worth it? Like, it's one thing if you're going to draft Shedeur and just make him the starting quarterback. If you believe he has the talent and you want to make him your starting quarterback or the future of your franchise, even if it's a year or half a season or whatever, but eventually, like, if you draft him in the first or second round, eventually he's getting his crack as a starter. And it's very unique for it to be more than a year. I know, and thank you for the call, Dennis. I know that's what happened with Love in Green Bay, but that's Aaron Rodgers. And then he started winning MVPs again. So, you know, things changed. But it's very rare that you would sit multiple years as a first or second round pick, even if it's for Matthew Stafford. So I don't know if the Rams were looking to do that necessarily. But then once you get into the third and fourth round, now you're figuring, I'm going to have an unhappy Shedeur and Deion Sanders sitting behind, and I don't even have a major commitment made to him. Like, it's just, it doesn't feel worth it. It doesn't feel worth the backup quarterback, you know, drafting for a backup quarterback. Eventually, it got to the fifth round, and it was like, well, this kid's too talented, and the value's too good to pass up in the fifth. But it was like first or second, and then once it got past that, it almost didn't make sense until you got to the fifth, almost. But I mean, I would have drafted him. And we, like, forget, like, I think the Dolphins, you talk about, we were talking this, Fleegs mentioned this to me yesterday. He's 100% right. We started talking about it. Like, to me, the Dolphins made a lot of sense. They've got Zach Wilson as the backup. Right now, Zach Wilson is their backup quarterback. You want to talk about a comp? Like, Shedeur Sanders is kind of the right-handed Tua. Very accurate, pocket passer, you know, reads defenses, is accurate, good on timing. Like, I would think that inside that Miami offense, you could really make that work. And especially for a quarterback that gets injured, unfortunately, as much as Tua does. Like, once you get, you're in the third round, you're in the fourth round, you're the Miami Dolphins, you got Zach Wilson as your backup quarterback. Shedeur Sanders doesn't make sense for you talent-wise? Like, that's where, I feel like there's a couple of spots where it makes sense. And Miami being a really big one, they don't have a backup quarterback, and I really feel like you want to talk about comps. He's right-handed Tua. That one made a lot of sense for me. I haven't thought Pittsburgh. It makes a lot of sense. I know Aaron Rodgers might be on the way, and they feel he can be. Like, again, me and Fleeks were also having the conversation about, you know, Geno Smith is the comp, right? I think. I even had a conversation with Gio about this, that Geno Smith was a name, or Chad Pennington, or Geno Smith, right? But, like, to me, you get Geno's, I'll take Geno's, you don't want to draft Geno Smith in the second, third round? When you have, how much money did Geno Smith just make out in Vegas? You're telling me I got a cheap Geno Smith for 4 years? There's a lot of value in that. Like, I'm surprised in an NFL that has guys who have committed heinous crimes. We've got, you know, all kinds of guys get drafted in this league. All kinds of guys get, Deshaun Watson, after being accused of sexual assault by 30 women, got the most guaranteed money in the history of the NFL. Shedeur Sanders showed up with, you know, his headphones blaring to a meeting, and he can't get picked. Like, I understand why I do. And I understand maybe the message the NFL was trying to send about entitlement and, you know, the headache that his father brings, all of it. Like, I understand why it happened. But I look at a couple of teams where I'm like, eventually it didn't make sense for you. Miami and Pittsburgh specifically.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, 449 McMonigle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Still getting over Brett. I mean, Gio's like, great, nice guy. It was actually, you know, it was awesome. Gio looks old and tired.
It's amazing.
The guy is amazing. 888-808-1019. It's just, it's relentless. He can't show a crack. I look silly because I didn't predict the most devastating fall from grace in an NFL draft's history. I didn't see it coming. What a silly bastard. Oh, my goodness. 888-808-1019. Let's try and fit as many calls as we can here before we get to the top of the hour. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
Hey, Chris. We spoke last week about the situation with the draft, and it made sense to get trade down and get Dodd, obviously, having Carter. As a longtime fan, I think most Giant fans are happy about it. I think we, you know, the thought of
I'm sorry, Richie.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think we are strong up front. We have to be. I want Thomas, obviously, to be healthy on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Neal not being picked up makes sense. Still have issues, secondary. Corners, I like Holland. I like Newbin. I think we've got to pick up defensively at the corners. Linebackers are okay. I'm not big real fans. I don't think they're that strong. But, you know, I got to hope, Chris, that they're going to be a little competitive going into, like, late November. You know, hopefully Wilson. And I want to see Hyatt all of a sudden come out of the cave and give them a really good offense, you know. You've got Tracy, you've got Johnson, you've got Neighbors, you've got Robinson, you've got some guys that can be okay if Wilson, and he proved last year that he was one of the better throwers downfield. So a little bit to look for. And obviously, Dart, you hope within 2 years you've got somebody. So we'll see. But I think at this point they had to do what they did, just to get people off their back and say, well, after 4 years, we finally got a potential quarterback. And the Sanders things, Chris, I've never seen anything like this in all the years I've been watching. A guy that was picked to be number one, number two, I mean, for it to go to 140, one day you'll find out what happened. Talking to you, Chris.
All right, good talking to you too, Richie. I mean, we have some clues into what's going on. People are getting mad at me now. I'm getting on Twitter because I said, you know, the Dolphins wouldn't pick him or whoever because he came into a meeting with his headphones blaring. I understand there was more than that. Sometimes I'm just trying to make a point that, yes, he had issues in the meetings. And, yes, specifically with Brian Daboll, had an issue about criticism and how he's handled the criticism or unprepared for a certain question, whatever. I get it. I understand why he dropped, but I'm sorry. I mean, in a league that's 100% based on talent, nobody thought it was worthy of a third or fourth round pick. And specifically, I look at the Dolphins. I'm not getting on the Dolphins or criticizing them. I'm just saying I feel like that would be a great fit. And in a league where talent is so above everything else, I do think he has the talent worthy of a third round pick, especially at the quarterback position when your backup is Zach Wilson.
It would have made sense. Chris, to be fair to Zach Wilson and the $6 million they gave him, we have no evidence or instances of Zach Wilson being anything other than a perfect teammate.
Yes. Perfect teammate, well prepared. He doesn't even like music. So it would have been he's going to be great as the backup in Miami. Just tremendous. And what number is he wearing again? Zero? Yeah, he's apropos. 888-808-1019. But yeah, look, I don't know how any Giant fan, you mentioned the first part of your call was most Giant fans are happy. I honestly don't know how a Giant fan could not be happy with this draft. I honestly don't know. Unless you think you are some sort of, and maybe you are, it's your profession or whatever, but just the average Giant fan who, you know, is just a normal guy. Even if you love college football, and even if you watch religiously every Saturday, and you feel pretty strongly that Jackson Dart is not going to be a great quarterback in this league, you have your opinion on it, fine, right? But they got arguably the best player in the draft, and Brian Daboll was able to pick his guy. He disagrees with you. And as much as you might think you're an educated fan, and I'm not knocking you, but from your couch watching college football, you might have an opinion, and you might end up being right. Who knows? Maybe Jackson Dart sucks. But you can't tell me that you think that you know more than Brian Daboll. And it doesn't matter whether you do or not. He's the coach. And I want the coach who helped develop Josh Allen, I'll say it again for those in the back row, and who's had a successful career dealing with quarterbacks, I needed him to get his guy. So they got the best player they could at three, arguably the best player in the draft, and an edge rusher that now sets the tone of this team and sets the culture of this team and the identity of this team, as we will get after the quarterback with Burns, Thibodeau, Carter, and Dexter Lawrence. That's the best unit on the team right now on paper. And they got the quarterback the coach loved. They moved up and got him in the first round, so they got him for 5 years. Like, I don't know how you can't be happy. I don't know what else you expected the Giants to do. You can't tell me now, you're disappointed it wasn't Shedeur Sanders. You're disappointed it wasn't Milroe. You're disappointed. Please. They got the quarterback. They got the best player in the draft. Like, you, if as a Giant fan, you have to be thrilled with this draft. Thrilled. I don't know how you could be any other way. I don't know how you could be disappointed as a Giant fan. Now, it might all be terrible. In 3 years, we can look back and go, this was an awful draft, and they should have fired Brian Daboll and Joe Shane before that, the year before. Maybe. But right now, I mean, I don't know how you don't at least have some sense of optimism here. 888-808-1019. Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
Hey. How you doing now? Just see Mac.
What's going on, Mario? What do we got?
How you doing, my friend?
I think we've good said hello like three always. Or four times, but good. What's going on, Mario? How are you?
Good show as always. Yeah, pretty good. Just want to go over the Knicks. I'm very excited about them, and I like the way they're playing together as a team. I saw the Boston game, the last game Boston played. I don't know if you watched the Boston series at all. Are you watching it?
Yes, not every minute of every game, but I've seen some to most of every game.
They were playing. They're playing Orlando, as everybody knows. And the last game, Orlando should have won. They have no offense at all, Orlando. They don't score any points.
Right.
Unfortunately. And they got a couple of kinks in the armor. I think the Knicks can be competitive against Boston once they get through Detroit. And I think they're going to get through to Detroit. My next point is...
Well, I'm sorry. We got to go. I'd love to take you longer, but it's rapid fire style, and we got to get to some other callers who've been on hold. I apologize, Mario. Thank you very much. Yeah, listen, I think they do have a puncher's chance against Boston. I don't feel overly confident about it, but I do think the Pistons gave them a bit of a challenge in a good way. And if they can close out the series in five and give themselves, you know, some rest heading into Boston, I think they're, you know, we talk about the step up. It's also a step up, you know, for the Celtics. I think, look, they've struggled against them in the regular season. I can't tell you that I expect them to win the series or expect them to even be overly competitive in it, but I think they have a puncher's chance. I'm looking forward to it, and I've liked the way they played the last two games, and I like the toughness, and I like Karl-Anthony Towns and the way he's responded in big games. These are big games. I know it's not against the Celtics or the Cavaliers or the Oklahoma City Thunder, the three teams that we've measured this team against in the regular season, but these games have been huge, and he has stepped up and been incredible down the stretch of these games. Let's go to Omar in North Bergen. What's up? I apologize. I feel bad for Mario. I literally just hung up with Mario to take Omar, and he's not there. Them's the breaks. 888-808-1019. But yeah, look, I really do think that this game is important for the Knicks. And not that they can't win game six. Right? They've won two games in Detroit. They can go win game six. And not that I wouldn't be confident in them winning a game seven back at the Garden should it get there. But I just don't like giving the momentum, and good teams close out these series as whenever they get the chance. I do not want to go back to Detroit. This is a big game. I know they're up 3-1. This is a big game. And it's going to tell me a lot about this team, and it's going to set up the next series against Boston. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow at 2 a.m. as well. Thank you to the great Michael Fliegelman. Stay tuned all day here on The Fan. We got baseball tonight. Obviously, we got game five of the Knicks-Pistons series. But baby steps. Next, the warm-up show. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I'll check you out tomorrow, 2 a.m. Have a great day. I'm out of here. Bye-bye. Sports Radio 101.